future, talk radio will actually educate, inspire, and make you think. The future is now. Topics and music that affect your life from Universal Broadcasting Network. Tune in at ubnradio.com.
This is Dates and Mates with your host, Damona Hoffman.
Hello, my lovers. Happy Wednesday and happy holidays to everyone.
Happy holidays.
I have all of the holidays, as you guys know. This is my time of year. And that's why today I want to share what I know about cross-cultural holidays. And I have some other people who will be joining me to share their insights on interfaith, intercultural, It almost went very dark for a minute. Just cross-cultural holidays. And even if you're in a relationship with someone, you could be the same religion, but have different cultural norms and traditions. And when we blend that all together, it can sometimes make a big mess. So we want to help you sort through that. I have a guest today who's from my home network, FYI TV, the spirituality expert of Married at First Sight, Greg Epstein. I'm so excited for him to join us. And I also have a guest co-host today, and her name is Rachel True. You have seen her on such movies as The Craft, which was like one of my favorite movies when I was younger.
In diapers.
She's also been on Half Baked. She played Mary Jane in that movie, and people still call her that walking down the street.
I really answer to that, which is probably not great, but I do. I just accept it now.
Just go with it.
That's
just
right.
Just go with it. And Half and Half on UPN.
That's right.
So
apparently producer Jay's mom watched it.
I didn't say that I was like two when it happened.
Well, it was a great show, and we're going to have a great show here today. And here's another maybe little known fact. Maybe people know this about you, but we are like the same mix here.
It's true. We are from the same tribe.
From the same tribe. And yes, I am Black and Jewish, and with a sprinkling of Native American, just to keep it fresh.
Exactly what I am, Black. I mean, and I'm mixed, but I say black, or depending, you know, whatever. So, with definitely Jewish background and sprinkling, actually a little more than a sprinkling. My family is super mixed with the Shinnecock tribe on Long Island, where you can tell I'm from because of the way I said that.
Well, I know you have a lot to share about cross-cultural holiday seasons then. And I do just want to shout out everyone who's listening to us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Spreaker. Make sure that you are following the show so you don't miss a single action-packed episode. And if you're listening live on UBN, you can sign into the chat roll and chat with us live during the show.
Do it.
That was the Long Island again.
Do it.
So big smooches. I forgot the big smooches. So we must give you big smooches, Rachel True, for being our guest co-host today.
Aw, thanks for having them. Go. And you know what? I can take the smooches. But one thing you guys, I saw in the preview for next week's episode of your show, #BlackLove, was somebody got an assignment to give hugs. And I was like, that's my nightmare, by the way. If you told me to go hug, I did not grow up hugging at all. So for me, my friends, when I was in my 20s, were like, okay, Rachel, we're going to make you hug. And I was like, okay, hug. And I still have to remind myself sometimes.
Hugs are so good.
I'm like a fun, affectionate person, but I just...
But you just do like high five.
Yeah, high five,
all right, girl.
What's up? Yeah.
We can't have too much skin to skin.
Exactly.
Well, speaking of growing up, I do want to hear about your experience being multicultural in Long Island.
Long Island.
Or on Long Island. What are you supposed to say?
You say on the island.
On the island.
Just
as if it's like
island.
A tropical retreat.
Well, you know, I lived on the island when I was very little, and then New York City. So I was really lucky that I just thought everywhere in the world had, a huge, insane Jewish and Korean population and Black population and Jamaican, and everybody was all going to school together and living together. Then we moved to upstate New York. And everything ended in terms of my view of the world. And I would say in upstate New York, they hardly, there were I sat at lunch with a Mormon girl, two Jews, and me because we were, what, the outcasts.
Yeah, I was going to say, because there was no one else.
That's right. That's
like
right.
You.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it was definitely a separate thing. And I would say for me, especially in upstate New York, I mean, I don't know that, you know, people would say to me, well, your dad's Jewish. That doesn't count. But the first time I set foot in a temple, as opposed to, say, a church or anything else, I remember our school, you know, we went on a trip to a temple, and I'd already been in one, but the first time I went in a temple, I felt at home. Everything made sense, from the direction it faced to the laws and rules, and they all made sense because I'd gone to a Catholic church, which is a lovely religion, but I'd gone, but I was like, what? The sitting, I just didn't understand.
It's tiring.
It's really tiring. Plus, I was like, what are you talking about? So when I was in temple, everything made sense because those are some really old, beautiful laws that are practical.
Well, you bring up a good point because certain, I would say probably all religions in some case are also cultural associations and not just about the religious aspect, but especially being Jewish, you are part of a lineage and there's tradition and history.
Did you have a bat mitzvah?
I did not.
You didn't?
No,
I thought you were going to be like, yes, and regale me with
Hebrew
tail.
Hebrew school dropout. No bat mitzvah day.
Really?
For me. No. And I was like, why didn't my parents make me do that? Because
I
would have had my college paid for. I mean, imagine if I had saved up from that time.
I think it's
so lucrative.
I wish I had gone to Hebrew school. In fact, I have cousins on Long Island who are the same deal as me. They're black, and Jewish, fully Jewish. Their mom's Jewish. They went to Hebrew school, and I think that's amazing and awesome. We also went to the JCC swimming pool a lot, and you should see the old ladies try to go, is that a tan? I'm not sure.
It's a little confusing for folks. And I grew up in Michigan, and there was nobody.
Nobody.
Do you have siblings? Me. Not of my two parents together.
Really?
So I was like a unicorn. But we celebrated everything. I think sometimes when you're multiracial, multi-religious, right. You are forced to choose, like, oh, well, are you black or are you white? Like, which tribe do you fit with? And I felt like my parents really encouraged me to enjoy the best of both worlds. And yet sometimes at the holiday time, it's a little
So you celebrated Christmas and Hanukkah.
I did. And then I married another half Jew.
Oh, you did? That's awesome.
No, he's not half black, though. That would be a quinky dink. Yeah. But I didn't realize until we had kids how, I guess, lucky I was that we didn't even have to have these conversations that we're going to be talking to Greg Epstein about later. How are we going to raise our kids? What religion are we going to expose them to? What are we going to celebrate in the home? Because it was always like Christmas tree and next to a menorah. And
but
that's
I kind
how
of thought that was the norm. Like, once again, you think how you grew up. One usually thinks how they grew up is the norm until you realize it's not. And I just assumed everyone had a menorah and a Christmas tree. You know?
Simona's got like three menorahs on her dining room table.
But I'll say this about my dad.
My menorah menagerie.
It's a menorah menagerie.
Awesome,
and then
though.
A Christmas tree.
But why not blend them together? Did you guys do the Hanukkah Harry thing?
No.
You know, some of my other friends did. And I was like, that's kind of like Santa Claus, isn't
right.
It?
Well, because we had Santa. So it's like Hanukkah Harry doesn't need
you
to
didn't
come.
Have to do Hanukkah Harry.
I'll tell you what, though. The Santa Claus tradition, that is a very deep that is a very deep story to have to perpetuate. Now that I have kids, I'm like, oh, there's so many things you have to think through.
That's
in
so
getting it to all fit together and
how
be believable.
How'd you do it for your kids then?
Oh gosh, I'm still figuring it out. I mean, they're still young, so they go with it. But then my daughter went to a Jewish preschool, and one of her friends said to her that Santa doesn't exist. And I'm like, well, how would she know? Because he doesn't come to her house.
That's what you said.
I don't know that I'm the most PC parent out there.
No, but what
I just
else?
Say it like it is.
I'm not
like
sure
I
you
feel
could
it
with your children, though.
What else could you do?
Her, my daughter's bullshit detector is just so deep.
It's so high.
How old is your daughter?
5.
Oh,
going
really?
On 15.
Well, she is
going
your
on
child.
50. No,
she's
see,
50. Like I said, 15, but maybe
no.
50.
It's going on 50.
She will break down that whole myth. Like, well, that doesn't make sense.
Did you give your kids traditional names? Like, my brother is Aaron. I'm Rachel. We have these old school. Biblical, you know, Old Testament names. No, not so
no.
Much.
Okay, but here's an interesting story. So I'm named after a city in Israel, which confuses people sometimes. It's also a city where there's like a nuclear reactor. So when people say, "Oh, you're named for Dimona, Israel," they're like, "But," and then they realize. Oh, the black Jews, because there was like a group of black Jews who moved there reclaim their Hebrew heritage around the time that I was born.
But so you're saying it's like the equivalent of being named like Three Mile Island or Love Canal?
Sort of,
like
but
that.
If there were black Jews there as well.
If there were black Jews
if there
as
were
well.
Black Jews there.
But so no, it confuses people.
Here's what I was going to throw in, though. We weren't really big on holidays, to be honest. I love holidays, but I'm saying as a kid, we were not that big on any of them. And my dad was pretty much an atheist up until the year before he died. Like, a lot of people get super religious when he was ill. So all of a sudden, I got, like, a Rosh Hashanah card from him. And I was like, really? That is interesting.
There are times, like, having children and you're at the end of your life where you start to realize that faith really means something. But faith doesn't have to be, in my book, about a particular organized religion.
Well, I like that you took it. It's about a cultural thing, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and I like that aspect of it. I've got two nephews who, my family, I'm giving it away. My sister married a Jewish guy. So she's got two kids. And for the longest time, when they were very little, they didn't know anything about any religion or God, which I realize your people are dropping out right now. But I actually didn't mind that because I thought at 1 and 2 years old, it was too much for them anyway to wrap their head around those concepts. Now they're a little older. Now they kind of are learning about both. And they're really excited that they get Christmas and Hanukkah.
I was going to ask you what your favorite Jewish-Christian holiday mashup was.
Oh,
so,
well,
like Hanukkah. Hanukkah, Christmas, Passover, Easter.
I think Passover, Easter is kind of awesome. I would say, like, I'm a big Rosh Hashanah girl. I think that's fun. I think it's a new year and a good holiday. You know, like that's.
And you don't. It doesn't have any of those like fasting.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's, no it's bread.
Easy. It's easy.
There's no restrictions. You can just go and hang out and celebrate
like,
the new
lighter
year.
Ones. You know what I mean?
But then things get really serious really fast when you Yom Kippur comes around.
Well, that's what I was going to say, though. And by the way, non-Jewish people, you don't say happy Yom Kippur. It's not really appropriate. So it's not. People are atoning for their sins. It's the time to be like, happy, what did you fuck up this year? Excuse me. Oh, I can't swear on the show. I do another radio show
it's
after
okay,
this, and
good.
I swear like a truck driver on it. So
Neuner,
pardon.
With
Neuner
Alec
with
Mappa
Alec Mappa. Yeah, so I'm going to watch. I'm going to watch my dirty little mouth.
It's okay. It's all right.
As we talk about religion.
This is actually, yeah, my new focus of the new year is cleaning up my act. So.
But I have a question for you because I've been in debates with people on Twitter about race and this and that. And I kind of try to stay out of them, but sometimes you get sucked in. And for me, when I think about me as a person, I feel like I'm a sentient human being first. Like I think, okay, I'm sentient. Then I feel feminine. Then I feel my black woman. And a lot of people on Twitter were like, you're not black enough because you're not saying you're black first. And I was like, but if I'm just, you know, and I'm brain thinking, this is has to do with the world that we live in, but that doesn't actually have to do with what and who I am. I'm a sentient being first before mm-hmm. even gender or race or anything.
Well, it's interesting because one of the things that I work with the women on my show, hashtag Black Love, about is being able to figure out who they are from the on the inside, but then also to bring what you want people to see into the world. And sometimes what you think people are perceiving you as doesn't always match up with who you are on the inside.
That's true.
And there was a lot of debate about that because people are like, well, if I'm conscious of how I'm projecting myself or even the words that you use, like saying I'm a black woman is sort of a label that you're putting out there
yeah.
before people people get their impressions from you. So it's an interesting process of aligning how you feel on the inside with what you want to be seen to achieve what you want in life. In this case, it's relationships. But I'm sure as an actress, it's also been maybe a double-edged sword for you in having to sometimes play the black role and sometimes you can...
Well, I will
be colorblind
say this. Part of what when I first started working in town, I think I hit at a certain time that was sort of perfect for me because I showed up and there were a lot of like Boys in the Hood movies going on and things like, which is a great movie, things like that going on that I was just realized I was never going to be cast in. Like there were girls who actually had that experience as the actors that they were, wherever they grew up culturally, they were that. They could go in and knock that out of the park. For me, look at the way that I talk. I had to, you know, adjust a lot of things, and that's what we actors do. But I ended up getting very lucky and going in on auditions that they weren't necessarily looking for anyone black. And I showed up, and this was again 20 years ago, and they were like, "You talk so good." And
you're so articulate.
Which is, you know, ridiculous.
That's and my nobody, least favorite word.
Nobody wants to be told. In fact, you know, so I, you know, managed to get these roles. Like The Craft was a white role. And I just happened to get that. But when we did, when I did Half and Half, you know, you do something called the upfronts where you present the shows. I was the one who's like, okay, welcome to our new show, blah, 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 blah. The advertisers are there at the upfronts and I was told I was so articulate so many times by so many advertisers that I almost said something and then I thought, no, we don't bite the hand that feeds us. These are the people who are paying for this TV show. Yeah. So if you want to call me articulate, that's fine. But what I hoped I could do within that role was let people know that there's all kinds, whether you're black or Asian or this, or it doesn't matter what you are. There are all kinds of different ways of growing up. And so am I articulate? I don't know. I did read a book a day as a kid. So
that must be why you're so articulate.
So articulate.
And that's very impressive.
But I did get I actually had retention too because the teacher didn't believe me and tested me on the books. And I
would she have said that to you if you were a white child?
Okay, Jay. Probably not.
No, but speaking of that, in the high school that I went to in upstate New York, and my scores weren't even that high. But I was the only black kid in a kindergarten through 12th grade school because my brother dropped out, so it was just me. And I would say that it was a hard school to be in, and I got the highest SAT scores to that school had ever gotten to that point. I'm sure someone's beat them now, but the thing that was so interesting was that when the teacher came to tell me that, this is how they said it. Did anyone tell you? Did they tell you? So did anyone tell you? Yeah, you got that. They were coming at me like I was cheating, first of all.
Oh,
second of all, I think it really rocked their world that this little brown interloper had come in and done better than them. And
it must have just been the Jewish side. I want to talk to you more about black love.
Hashtag black love
hashtag,
or black love?
Well, hashtag black love. But my God, we have to keep it moving. So maybe we can save a little time at the end of the show and talk about hashtag black love and talk about Married at First Sight.
Oh, yeah. No, I want to because I love both shows. In fact, I was so excited a couple weeks ago. Monet was in the studio and I was like, I love your show.
She's so awesome. So we'll talk about her in a little bit. But I really want to get to our guest, Greg Epstein.
Yay!
So he can talk to us about spirituality, as he is an expert in spirituality. And he is one of the experts on Married at First Sight. But we're going to take a short little break, and we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Dates and Mates. I'm your host, Damona Hoffman. I'm Damona Hoffman, and I am so thankful to be nominated for iDate's Best Dating Coach of 2016. So I thought I should tell you a little bit about who I am and why I think I'm qualified to win this prestigious award. I was actually the first dating coach in California to be certified by the International Dating Coach Association.
Lou.
And I'm the host of the FYI TV show, Hashtag Black Love. And really, that show is one of the only shows on television that really shows dating coaches doing what we do and transforming lives and helping people overcome their obstacles in dating. Speaking of overcoming obstacles in dating, I thought I'd give you a little bit of info on my philosophy. You see, I am a modern dating coach. I don't believe in the old rules of chivalry and the traditional gender roles. And I really coach people from a point of view of how to survive the dating world and find what you want
in a modern world where technology has impacted everything about the dating process. And I know this because I actually started online dating over 15 years ago. I ended up meeting my husband on a dating site 12 and a half years ago. And since that time, singles have come to me to help them overcome their modern dating dilemmas. And there's so much for people to deal with now with dating sites, dating apps, texting and dating, and emojis, and all of these new modes of communication and new rules of courtship where men and women now have a level playing field and can both communicate with one another. And there's a lot of confusion over what the current gender roles are because they've definitely shifted from the traditional. So this is really what I specialize in and what I love to do every week on hashtag Black Love on FYI. So if you believe in that cause and you believe in me, please vote for me for iDate's Best Dating Coach of 2016. I have been a big fan of iDate for a long time. I've been coming to the conference for 6 years and it would be a tremendous honor to be named the Best Dating Coach this year. Thank you.
That's right, friends. I am nominated for iDate's Best Dating Coach of 2016. And I have to admit, I was nominated 2 years ago and I didn't win. So I need your help. And now you know why I deserve your vote. So it's super easy to do it. All you need to do is go to idateawards.com and fill in the little button for Best Dating Coach with my name, Damona Hoffman. And I could be the winner this year. I could be the big winner. So thank you for your support and thank you for listening to Dates and Mates. I am joined in studio with a guest co-host. This is special. I don't get a guest co-host very often.
Really? Well, thank you for having me because I was super excited because I love the show you're on.
Thank you.
And I just love what you're doing here.
Thank you. So that is the lovely Miss Rachel True. She is an actress. She's also co-host of Nooner, which is on right after us. So stay tuned to UBN. And producer Jay is still in the house too.
I'm still here.
We haven't run him out here
yet. I don't get
a
co-host. Blah, blah, blah. I'm just a tech person. It's okay.
No. No, I mean, you're the pretty...
I love you too,
Damona. Don't do this. We don't have time for this today.
I know, right?
Let me introduce my guest for today. He is the humanist chaplain at Harvard University and the author of the New York Times best-selling book, Good Without God, What a Billion Non-Religious People Do Believe. He's the spirituality expert of A&E's hit TV show, Married at First Sight, and he has valuable insights to share on navigating interfaith relationships over the holidays. I know a lot of people are going through this right now, so we got to get to it and give big smooches to Greg Epstein.
Hi there. Good to talk to you, Damona and Rachel. I was listening to your segment earlier. I love the podcast, love what you guys were talking about. And I really am enjoying Black Love. I'm not totally caught up, so no spoilers, please. But it's it's a great show, and it's a great concept for a show, too.
Thank you. And so is your show, Married at First Sight.
I love it.
It's been
crazy. We're both fans.
It's been huge to be involved with it.
Well, I want to hear from your perspective. We talked to Dr. Logan Lefkoff last week about how sexuality plays into the decision-making process and selecting the mates. But I want to hear from you about spirituality, because I always say to my clients that having shared values is one of the most important things in finding a long-term partner. So yes. I know that spirituality does play into that, and that must have had a big bearing on who you selected to be partnered this season.
Yeah, I'm a huge believer in the idea of shared values, as you just said. And I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean religious values, by the way. It doesn't mean believing in any particular form of a god, or even, you don't need to call it spirituality even. What I'm talking about is people who believe in the same values, the same sense of what it is to be a good person, and whose cultures are compatible. I mean, you guys were just talking about the fact that there are so many people out there, and more every day, every year, that come from mixed ethnic, racial, cultural backgrounds, and you can be completely compatible and be mixing all of those things. It's just a matter of, do you have a common sense of what it is to live a good life and be a good person? And are you flexible enough and interested enough in combining your background so that you can learn from the other person instead of be put off by their differences?
So here's a question for you, Greg. What are the questions that people should be asking to determine if they have compatibility in that realm? Because I feel like people don't even know how to begin to decipher that question.
Yeah. I mean, I think people should think about exploring what the meaning of life is to them. And
oh, that's deep, Greg. That's so deep.
I mean, but really, we avoid these questions. You know, you get so much education in all kinds of school about what your job is going to be or what your career field is going to be, how to be successful academically, et cetera. You know, we get educated about a range of things, but basically, in this day and age, it's such a taboo topic to answer questions of what is the meaning of life, unless you are taught from a perspective of being extremely religious. And most of the young people that I work with today, the majority of the people that we saw in interviews for Married at First Sight are not super religious. You know, many did identify as Christian or Jewish or Muslim or Hindu or Buddhist. But there were tons of people that identified as atheist or agnostic or non-religious. And even a lot of the religious people, it's like that's not super important to them. But then if you ask, all right, so what is the meaning of life? And they're just like, I don't know. Is there life after death? I don't know. Is there, is there a God? Is there a, I'm not religious. I'm a humanist. But I'll work with anybody and I will, you know, help anybody and I'll count anybody as a part of my community if they're thoughtful, if they have good questions, and if they've thought through some answers for themselves and they're really trying based on those answers to live a good life.
Yes, I agree. And I will say I ask my clients to identify what they believe, but also to ask why they believe what they believe. Because sometimes I think we get religion or tradition passed down to us generation to generation. And many times people don't even stop to ask, does that fit for me? Does that align with my worldview? Yeah. and if you can't explain it for yourself, how could you explain it to another partner?
But yeah, I mean, most people are whatever religion their parents were. And that's why actually sometimes you get really especially thoughtful, smart people who are coming from mixed backgrounds because they can't rely on that. They can't just say, oh, well, my parents were this and so I'm going to be this. You actually have to sit there and think through, what do I believe and what do I not believe? Because I'm getting mixed messages here.
Mm-hmm. That must be why you got the highest SAT score. You were doing all that thinking, book reading.
I have kind of a question because I was writing a script and in my script, the character was online dating, which I had never done. So I signed up for a profile, right? And I missed, there were a lot of guys, especially black guys, who the number one thing was God-fearing Christian. And I was like, meh.
Were you on Christian Mingle?
No. No, Lady of Tinder.
No way.
Straight up.
Isn't that a little
but no,
contradictory?
But, no, but I'm saying a lot of the brothers, and there were some super cute ones, led with God-fearing Christians, so I was like, not so much. So I swiped the other way, whichever, I'm not on it anymore. Left. So I swiped the other way, but should I have tried to engage with them and then been like, no, I don't want to go to church or what? Like, or said,
from my perspective, the answer would be no,
but right, I didn't,
but I would say either way, you know, the point is that I would want you to be comfortable in your own skin as a not particularly religious person. And I think it's really mistaken to think that you have to be religious in order to be a good person. And so I think sometimes people they're trying to come at it with good intentions. They're thinking like, oh, well, I want somebody who's a good person, so maybe I'll ask for somebody who's religious. But the two don't correlate. I mean, there are great people who are religious and there are great people who are non-religious and there are great people who are, you know, there are terrible people who are religious and there are terrible people who are non-religious. If you want to marry or date a good person, you're going to have to do a lot more thinking about it than just what do they say they believe or what religion do they affiliate with.
I'm not always sure that it's just a good person situation, though, because and this is producer Jay. I know I'm not on camera, but hey, I'm,
sure.
I'm here. But but the thing is like, especially with because I'm Pentecostal, so I grew up Pentecostal, and it's a very strict, basically, you know, form of Christianity. And the thing is it may not necessarily even be the thing of like, oh, is this person a good person or not? But there's also a component of a heaven or hell situation. And like, seriously, when you're talking about relationships and then it's like, if you're trying to get into a relationship, and especially for these guys that are on Tinder, I have no idea what they're exactly doing.
Don't look
doing
at me like
saying.
I'm the expert.
I'm just saying, but this kind of goes to what you were saying though, about like for them in that situation, especially if it, like they're on a hookup app, it might not be about the good person situation, but it may have more leaning toward the, yeah, but if we actually end up together, I want to like, you know, I want us to like go to heaven. And it might be like four things that they may be sticking with, because like I'm not saying that they're right or that they're wrong. I'm saying that that's a component.
Here's the thing. I'm probably going to get myself in trouble now with both you and everyone listening.
Do it.
But that the thing that sometimes frustrates me with organized religion and people that say they practice it is that sometimes their actions don't match
quite
their words,
often, which is exactly so these what guys Greg are... was talking right. about right. that you want to find somebody who isn't just saying the platitudes of the religion or going to church, right, or temple or whatever, or we're at mosque on sun and on going there and then doing really terrible things all week and then going
these guys
one day a week
are hooking up on Tinder and then they're like, but you need to fear God,
right?
So
yeah, it is often a form of oppression, by the way. I mean, it's, you know, there are really wonderful, sincere people who are strict religious people. But, you know, there are also situations that you get yourself into where, you know, religion can be patriarchal, right? So it can be in some situations a way of saying, you know, a woman needs to know her place. And that's not my thing. I'm an intersectional feminist.
Oh my God,
so,
how dreamy is he, by the way? Seriously, I have a boyfriend, but I have a total platonic crush on you. From watching you on the show, I just think you're very smart and charming and attractive.
And he works at Harvard.
And he works at Harvard, and you're smart.
But I do want to ask you, you are the humanist chaplain at Harvard, and you've been ordained as a secular Jewish rabbi. So just break that down for us a little bit. Like, what exactly?
Oh, good. I'm not that, because I was going to ask, mean? And I was like, I'm going to seem dumb if I ask that. So thank you, for
Rabbi Greg.
I mean, my wife asks me about this like every other day. You know, like, can you just explain more?
He's like, calm down, Rachel. My wife. Yeah. Okay. Go on.
So, yeah, I am a humanist rabbi. And that means that Judaism is my culture. It is my heritage. It is, you know, both of my parents happen to have been Jewish, and I trace Jewish heritage back thousands of years. But in terms of my beliefs, I'm a humanist. And that means I believe that we are all equal as human beings, that there's no such thing as a chosen people, that we're all the products of evolution, that we go back about 4 billion years to the Big Bang. That's when the universe started. And the Earth is about, 14 billion years ago, rather, is when the universe started. And the Earth is about 4 billion years old. And there's no set purpose that evolution has. It's not a conscious thing, that it's up to us to decide how to be good people and to be good people and to create a good society. And so that's one of the reasons why I feel really comfortable as an advisor on Married at First Sight, working with people of all different backgrounds. I'll sit down with a Christian, a Muslim, a Hindu, a Buddhist, a Jain, a Zoroastrian, somebody who's atheist, agnostic, humanist, whatever. And, you know, I like to hear about people's different traditions and values. But to me, at the end of the day, we're all just human beings. Nobody's any better or any worse. No one belief system is right. I believe in my sense of my humanism, but it doesn't make me a better person. And that's, I think, probably why I got picked to be on a show like Married at First Sight.
So, Damona, you would be a humanist then, don't you think?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lovely description, the way he described it. I mean, that's sort of...
I'm going to be a humanist
now.
I'm
a humanist.
Where do I sign up?
But, all right, well, I'll have you on the humanist podcast at some point.
But since this is a dating show, I want to throw out the what he did. Like, when I was like, oh, he's cute, I said I have a boyfriend. And what I love, what he did was like, da-da-da-da-da, my wife. And that is what people who are in relationships should do, I think. Don't you? Like, if you're going to... I do.
I think they should.
No, because I love it when my boyfriend, if someone's chatting him up and he's like my girlfriend, because it cuts it off at the pass and then right. they can still have a conversation. But hopefully, you know, it's not so flirty. It's just right. a conversation. And I kind of, I like when.
I respected like when my Greg Epstein. I was like, thanks. Yeah. That's okay, so, man stuff.
So as we're talking about marriage and Married at First Sight, I do want to dive a little deeper into the show. I want to go back a season. I want to go to season two because there was a big focus that year on how people spent their holidays. And because it was filming in December, which season three was not. But it was interesting. It was really telling, like Davina and Sean that season didn't involve their families in their holidays at all. And they kind of created a new holiday tradition together. And Ryan, it was really important to have Jacqueline be a part of his large family mm-hmm. holiday. So what can you tell from a partner as we're here in December, a couple days from Christmas? Is there something that you can tell from a partner and whether they would be a good fit from you based on how they spend their holiday season and how they include you in it?
Well, I there's no one litmus test, right? I mean, it's not like, oh, you didn't give me a present that was the right kind of present, so you're out.
And there are fact, people that do that, though.
Something that people put too much emphasis on is gifts, mm-hmm. material gifts. I'd rather see people giving each other experiences. You know, I'll buy us tickets to something that we can go together that'll be memorable, or a place that we'll visit together, or whatever. But I will say that. Yeah, I mean, the whole point of this time of year to me as a humanist is that this is the coldest and darkest time of the year for people in the Northern Hemisphere, you know, the majority of people on Earth. And all of the holidays around this time of year, and there are a lot of them, if you've ever noticed, right? They're all based on the fact that we get cold and we get and it's dark. And when it's cold and it's dark, we get depressed. Seasonal affective disorder, right? Mm-hmm. With the acronym itself spells out SAD. And it's true. You get sadder at this time of year. And so all these holidays are meant to kind of lift people up and bring some joy and bring people together. And that's great. And I think that, you know, it can be extra hard when people are trying to do these cultural things to bring themselves together and to connect. And then you've got people who are at each other's throats because, well, I need to do it this way. And, oh, no, but I need to do it this way. And your way is never going to match with mine. You probably don't want that kind of headache in your life unless there's really, really good reason to be with a person like that. You know, that kind of clash of culture, clash of civilizations in a relationship, you know, it's something to think about avoiding.
I totally agree with that. And also, I remember when I first moved to LA, I was dating someone who is super famous now. And they were going to a Passover dinner and they didn't invite me. And I knew that was a sign. Actually, we've been dating for a while, not a year, but under a year. But I thought, oh, okay, they're white and Jewish. They're not including me in this. They know I'm half. We're just not meant to be. They're not that into me is what I took away from that. And I think that's what people should sort of realize is like if you're with someone and they're not willing to sort of go, oh, OK, you're Christian. I'm Jewish. What does that mean? How can I be respectful to my culture, but include your culture in our holiday season? That might not be the mate for you because you want someone who wants to include you, wants to think about your feelings, wants to make you feel comfortable as well as themselves. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of, kind of.
And that's something we talk about.
Says the non-married lady.
It's something that came up on hashtag Black Love, where there are, I don't know if it's aired yet, actually, but there are people that sort of have this like fetish of like, I'm going to date the black girl. And like, she's Jewish, but she's still black and she's exotic. And there's like this exoticizing, is that if that's
absolutely
a word.
No, when I was coming up, because again,
but they don't really want to include you in the whole,
right? They wanted to date me, they wanted to sleep with me, but they didn't want to include me in that. And I know I was pretty very mellow, good girl, very chaste when I was younger, because there was this, people said to me, listen, there's a stereotype about black girls that you guys just like to do it all night and did it. And I was like a virgin, and I was like, I don't know what you're talking. It just really freaked me out.
You're like, do what?
Exactly. And also there was a stereotype that back then people said black girls you all get pregnant, and that's just so mm-hmm. Everything was clamped down because I really
that was a visual
no, but I was and I'm sad that I was carrying around other people's impressions of me, because I'm sexuality is a beautiful thing, you know.
Now you could just be a humanist and just like humanist. Peace, love, and evolution.
So
you
I
know?
Can do anyone I want, right?
Yeah, I mean, and you can still celebrate holidays, and you can still have cultural traditions, but you can just do it in a really open-minded way. It forces being a humanist to me forces you to be creative. And yeah, I mean, I would say like anybody that really, really either wants to impose their cultural tradition on you and won't accept yours at all, or won't invite you to their cultural celebration or whatever. I mean, that speaks to an insecurity in them that they need to do a lot of work on. And, you know, unless they've got other qualities that are really great, you know, I would see that lack of open-mindedness as a major red flag.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
One more question for you. So the experiment on Married at First Sight is to marry a stranger and date them, get to know them for 6 weeks and decide if you want to stay together or get a divorce. That's a big word, divorce. And in many cultures, that's really seen as a taboo, as a sin. And you mentioned earlier that not a lot of, many of the people that you see on Married at First Sight are not super religious. Do you think that fear of divorce and being, you know, cast into the depths of hell or what have you, if you do the experiment and it doesn't work out, do you think that's something that may have kept people who are more religious from this experience?
Yeah, I mean, in good conscience, how could I encourage somebody who believes that if this experiment were to not result in lifelong marriage, that they're going to burn in hell? How could I encourage that kind of person to proceed with the experiment? I would have a really hard time doing that. I mean, you know, you'd have to be crazy. So yeah, I'm looking for people who have a certain amount of open-mindedness. Now, those people could be, as I said before, they could be any number of religions or not religious, but you've got to have an open mind and be willing to be creative and experiment a little bit with some new possibilities in order to do this. And I personally think that's a good quality. We've had people that have walked in and been strict evangelical Christians or very strict from other religious perspectives. And I try to ask those people some serious questions to get them to rethink whether this is right for them. If they then go on and say, hey, I want to be considered, that's fine. But it's not an accident that we haven't cast anybody or married anybody yet who is very, very strictly or fundamentally religious. It's not that we have anything against them. It's just that they may not be the right fit for this particular kind of experiment.
Do you think, you probably answered this a million times, but 6 weeks, that's not a lot of time. I feel like it takes me about 3 months dating someone and then I know whether they're crazy or not. But it takes like it takes 3 months.
But that's part of the point here. Number one, people waste a ton of time in bad relationships.
Agreed.
A ton of time.
Agreed.
Right. True. So a lot of people, I tell people, treat your first date. Now, this is if you're looking for a serious relationship, if you are looking for somebody that you would like to be married to eventually. If you're not, forget it. You know, forget I'm even talking here. But if you're looking for somebody serious, then you treat that first date as what I would call a psychosocial interview, where you ask them all kinds of serious, deep, meaningful questions.
So you encourage that on the first date.
Absolutely, I do.
Well, it's a lot better than people talking about, like, what do you do for a living? And, you know, where did you grow up? And just asking the same stock questions and having boring-ass dates, right?
Because I'm kind of like that. And if it drives someone away, that's not my person. I know that now that I'm a grown-up. I didn't know that when I was younger, though.
But that is pretty deep for a first date, Greg.
Yeah. Like, Greg, would you say...
I mean, that's the point. Is, you know, if you don't want a serious relationship, fine. But if you do want a serious relationship, then what's wrong with going deep at the beginning?
So you're saying talk religion and politics on the first date?
Yeah, I would. Wow. Absolutely, I would.
I have actually heard that politics is more...
I asked my wife some of the hardest questions I've ever asked her on our first date.
And she didn't run away, so that's how you knew.
No, not at all. I mean, I thought it brought us closer together.
Yeah, they say, as far as politics on a date, they say that having different political views is much more divisive than having different religious views.
That's probably true in today's world, actually, yeah.
Really conservative or really liberal. There's the meeting of the minds cannot happen. We've taken up enough of your time, Greg Epstein. And all right. I just want to share, I want you to share one last bit of wisdom for people to keep in mind going into this holiday season if they are having a first holiday experience together. What's one bit of wisdom, whether they're cross-cultural or not, they may be having different traditions that are coming together. How can we blend traditions and have a successful holiday? We have Christmas coming up, New Year's, Valentine's Day is right around the corner. All right. How can we blend it all together?
I would don't obsess over the gift, really. Whether it's diamonds or just, you know, even a nice card or whatever, don't obsess over the physical thing that you're going to give that person, because there's a ton of research that shows that getting physical things isn't going to make you much, if any, happier. You want to focus on getting to know the person and on having meaningful experiences together. So, you know, if you want to have the right story to tell your friends about what gift you got, fine. Go out and ask for a great gift, but that's not necessarily going to help your relationship. If you want a good relationship, then go out to places that you're going to have a good, meaningful experience together, spend time together, do things with and for one another that'll make each other happy, spend time with the people that you love. That is what is going to actually warm you up and make you happier at a time of year when you're most likely to be sadder. And so that's what I would hope people would focus on.
I love that advice. And I always have said to my husband, I prefer experiences than physical gifts. So I'm right on track there.
All the research.
I must be a dating expert or something. But we love Married at First Sight. We adore you. And we can't wait to see what happens next week. And it's on every Tuesday night on A&E and on FYI. And you're also the author of a best-selling book that is amazing. And so people can pick up It's Good Without God. So thank you for sharing all of your wisdom with us. And hopefully you can come back and be on a future show again. We loved having you.
Anytime. Thanks so much, Damona. Thanks, Rachel. Thanks, Jay. Appreciate
Bye.
It.
Thank you. Bye. And you can follow Greg on Twitter at Greg M. Epstein. Thanks, Greg.
Yeah. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I thought he said some really great things within that.
He's real smart.
He's real smart.
Must be that Harvard.
But I actually didn't know much about humanists, that side of religion.
I think I'm a humanist. I might even be a humanist Jew, not a humanist rabbi.
You probably are.
No. I don't know. Okay, Rachel, we have 1 minute to
talk about your show?
My show.
Yes, hashtag Black Love, which I love.
So, okay, he didn't want to hear any spoilers, but if you don't want to hear any spoilers, you can
cover
your ears, but just for a second. What'd you think of last night's episode?
First of all, I really like the show. I think you have a great cross-section of women. They're all smart. They're all interesting. And I love that you're on it with setting up a therapy sort of session for them, or I'm not sure exactly what you call it on the show, but I call it therapy. And I think it's awesome because there's a lot of people out there who've never done therapy, and this is a good introduction for them to see that it's not some weird mumbo jumbo. It's actually just tools to help you. And that's what I love about watching it, is that within each woman, even if you're not exactly like one girl, there might be something about the other girl that you have in common, or like the girl who's sort of reticent or held back a little. I recognize old me, not so much me now, but a younger me was like that as well.
Like Jay, the one that was saying she's looking for an established older
man.
Okay,
no, that was not me at all. That was not me at all.
What are you holding back? Oh, the one who had the date, Cynthia.
I'd be married really well if I had followed that, I suppose. But that's never been my thing.
No,
like marriage was never
you're out
my
for love.
Marriage was never my end game, and still kind of isn't. But I like that there's a mirror reflection for all women out there. I also love that it's black women on TV, all different shades, and they're not pulling each other's weaves out, and that's awesome. TV right there.
Thank you.
You're giving them skills.
And I think, I just have to say, I think also in the black community, sometimes there is a stigma that if you can't get help or get therapy.
Right.
That's not something that's accepted. So I love that Jack and I are able to help these women in this way and have other people see there's like nothing bad or wrong. There's nothing wrong with you.
It's just
empowering you to be able to make your best decisions and be your best self.
It doesn't go against your religion or your this or your that. And one of the nicest tweets when I searched for a hashtag Black Love, which you should too, there was one of the guys who was a brother was saying, this is great. This is awesome because you're giving us skills that we can use, but that we brothers can use in dating. And I think
we're giving them the playbook on what's happening in inside the female mind.
But it's a pretty good playbook. I do think you have some interesting archetypes on it. I think like if you recognize like you're prickly, if you're a woman and you're watching and you go, oh, I'm a little prickly like that on a date, that's something to examine and maybe work on, because it can be, it's off-putting for when I'm prickly myself, I don't like me. So how's anyone else gonna like me, whether it's a friend or a dude?
That's true. You gotta want to date yourself.
And well, I have many times.
You're so fun, Rachel True. I'm so glad that you were able to join us.
Thank you so much for having me on. This was a blast.
Thank you. I hope you'll come back. But I know you have to do another show right after this.
I do.
Nooner with Alec Mappa and Calpurnia. And
that's
you're
right.
The co-host there. So we'll have to wrap it up so you guys can start your show. I want to thank you all at home for tuning in. And don't forget to exercise your right to vote and nominate me for the best dating coach of the year at idateawards.com. Follow me on Twitter at Damona Hoffman. You can always send me your dating questions and I can answer them on a future show or on Twitter, or just let's just chat. And be sure to check out Black Love on Tuesday nights at 10:15 p.m. on FYI, right after a new episode of Married at First Sight every week. Join us again next Wednesday right here on UBN Radio, where my guest will be Madame Control Freak, Tanisha Wood of hashtag Black Love. And we talked a little bit on this episode this week about gender dynamics and how to access more feminine energy when she feels a little bit more masculine. So we're going to explore gender dynamics on next week's episode. Until then, happy holidays and happy dating.
Bye.